We are going to energize the country.
We need to wake up and smell the coffee.
No more Mr. Nice Guy.
Another future's possible, but we've got to fight for it.
Order!
Hello and welcome to the Debated Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Will. And in this episode, I'm delighted to be joined by Jodie Fanriger, who is the leader of the Manx Labour Party. Welcome to the podcast, Jodie.
Thanks, Will. It's great to be here.
So the first question that I'd like to ask is, this year we'll of course see a general election on the Isle of Man. For those who aren't familiar with politics on the Isle of Man, what kind of assembly or parliament do you have on the Isle of Man, and what form do your elections take that may be similar or differ to elections in the UK?
Okay, so a bit of background. Our parliament, which is called Tynwald, is the oldest continuous democratic parliament in the world. So we do have a long history of democracy over here. The way that it's set up is that we have 12 constituencies and two members of the House of Keys, which is the equivalent of your MPs, so MHKs, per constituency. So totaling 24 MHKs who will be elected in September. And we have a population of around about 85,000. So compared to your system, we have a lot of political representation. Our politicians are very accessible, I guess. And I think that's, personally, I feel that's a positive because it does mean that you have a lot more redress, I suppose. And there's more accountability on some levels.
What do you think in terms of the fact that, as you mentioned, the House of Keys there, the Isle of Man quite often has a lot of independent candidates standing rather than necessarily candidates from political parties as such. Do you think that that lends itself well to people to be able to engage in? Why do you think that there are so many independent members of the House of Keys on the Isle of Man?
It's a really, really interesting question. You know, there's a lot of dialogue really on the island about political parties and whether it would be good for us to move towards a party system. And I've always heard since I was a child growing up on the island that political parties just don't work on the island. But there doesn't seem to be any substance to that. It's just a thing that people say. Obviously, as the leader of the Manx Labour Party, I do strongly believe that a political party system would be better for us in terms of accountability, in terms of knowing what you're voting for. So the way that our system tends to work, and I don't think anybody would disagree with this over here, is that people who declare as independents tend more often than not to be conservative with a little c. We do even have a couple of our MHKs who are members of the UK Conservative Party who are declared as independents. So what we're getting at here is that you don't know what way that person's going to actually vote when it comes to crunch votes in Tynwald. If they're standing as independents, you have no way of actually gauging what that person is going to stand for in Parliament if they get elected. So that's really what we keep trying to sort of push, is that with a political party, you've nailed your colours to the mast, you know what you're going to get. And so there are currently three parties on the island. They are Manx Labour Party, which is the longest running political party, and we've been established since 1918. And then the Liberal Fanon Party, established in, I think it was 2006, and more recently the Isle of Man Green Party. So all of them tend to stand on a sort of vaguely centre-left or centrist platform. There aren't any parties for conservative groups. And the reason for that is that it has largely been felt there is no need for that because of the way that our political system works, which is that independents tend to veer towards the right. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Do you think that in terms of, you mentioned the long history of the Manx Labour Party, do you think that by the fact it isn't directly connected as such to the UK Labour Party, do you think that that gives you an ability to as not follow the lead of the UK Labour Party in the same way that parts of the UK that are devolved, like, for example, Wales or Scotland, the Welsh or Scottish Labour Party sort of have to follow the lead of the UK Labour Party. Do you think that that gives you more freedom in terms of the policies that you put forward, that complete and utter separation as such?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I mean, we've never been affiliated, as you say, with UK Labour or any other country's Labour movement. I think that globally, Labour movements stand for the same thing and have the same ethos of fairness and equality. But we haven't really modelled ourselves upon any country's Labour Party. And we've never, as you say, we've never been allied with the UK, and that we don't have any, we don't have any sort of, there's no onus upon us to follow what they're doing, and that suits us perfectly well. We do have our own issues over here. We have our own, you know, people and our own economy, and the issues aren't the same as the UK. That's just a kind of a fact. So we need to have that. Yeah, we do need to have that kind of freedom, I guess, to put forward our own policies that suit the Manx people.
Do you think that in terms of policies that suit the people of the Isle of Man, Manx people, do you think that you have to ensure that the policies are concentrated on the island as a whole, or do you think that things that might work better in particular areas of the island will work better than some policies that might apply to other areas? Do you take an island as a whole view, or do you see different areas of the island and think, well, this policy will apply particularly well to this area, but perhaps not to this other part of the island?
Yeah, that's quite an interesting question. There is some debate, really, on our island as to whether MHKs or maybe MLCs, which is members of the Legislative Council, the upper chamber, should be elected on an island-wide basis rather than as representatives of constituencies, which would obviously mean that you could then garner support from everywhere in the island rather than one small area. But I guess some people would argue that it comes with the pitfall of more difficult areas might be left unrepresented because nobody would maybe want to pick up the issues of those maybe more socially diverse areas or areas of poverty, for example. Mm. I think that the constituencies set up works quite well. But having said that, I see myself, as you know, I'm standing for MHK in September, and I would see myself very much as an island-wide politician. Mm. I think that we're too small, really, to be honest, to be more insular than that. And there would be no question for me of throwing one constituency under a bus in order to benefit the other one, because we are an island community. And that is the way that we see ourselves as well. We do very much, there is a very strong sense of community on the island. So I think that's what the Manx people would expect from a politician as well, actually.
Mm. Now, you mentioned that, of course, you are standing for Douglas East in the election that's coming up. What do you see as the main concerns in the constituency that you're standing in? And do you see any difference between the main concerns in that particular constituency and the concerns of the rest of the aisle?
Yeah, so the way that we really work it over here is that the MHKs will tend to electioneer on national issues. We also have the local authority elections running this year, and that would be very much more constituency specific. So for Douglas East, the local authority, the councillors will be running on looking at parking, looking at housing issues. So there's quite a lot of derelict properties in Douglas that are eyesores, essentially. I know that lots of them from our party, the Manx Labour Party, will be trying to look at active travel, you know, setting up the constituency better for active travel, looking at green areas and maybe urban fruit trees. So that's the sort of thing that they would be looking at for Douglas East. But we do tend to run on a national issues ticket when we're running for MHKs. So although I am running for the constituency of Douglas East, and having grown up there, I'm very aware of the issues in Douglas East. The sort of issues that I'm running for will be looking at affordable housing, looking at mental wellbeing. The climate crisis is a big one. Education, our falling birth rate on the Isle of Man, as well as retention of young people. Obviously, there will be, I think, a hot button issue this election of modernisation of cannabis legislation.
In terms of the impact that coronavirus has had, has that directed in any way the concerns of people on the Isle of Man? Do you think that is going to influence your manifesto, the things that have come up from coronavirus? Obviously, not just the virus itself, but the impact that it has had, as you mentioned, on people's mental health and industry as well.
Yes, I think that anyone who is elected in September surely must know that they are not in for an easy term. And that's not just the Isle of Man, obviously, that's globally. The economic fallout from the pandemic is going to affect, it's going to touch us all, isn't it? And I think that's one of the reasons that I'm feeling very passionately that we need to have progressive people more and more at the moment, because we have repeatedly seen what happens in situations of, in crisis situations, essentially, in the past, is that the financial burden falls upon those who are least able to pay for it. Disproportionately, any financial fallout is shouldered by the lower end of the socioeconomic spectrum. And that is what I'm very, very keen to try to avoid this time around. I think that we're facing multiple crises. Like I mentioned before, the climate crisis, and we have acknowledged the climate emergency in summer of 2019. And we've seen some progress there, but nowhere near enough, considering that we have acknowledged that we're in an emergency situation. And that's another thing that's going to require huge public spending, but mass public support in order to bring people along with us and in order to actually make that a just transition. And of course, the mental health crisis that we're facing as well. So we're looking on the island at, we know that our suicide rates have risen very, very sharply, very sadly, over 2020. And we know that our mental health services have been underfunded. We've got some absolutely fantastic practitioners, but we do need to join up our services. And that is a crisis point. There's no kind of overstating that. That is a crisis point, because lives are being lost. We also have the climate crisis. We are looking at the economic fallout from the pandemic. And we don't have affordable housing over here. We keep attracting high net worth individuals who seem to see the island as an investment opportunity, which is artificially driving housing prices up for Manx people. So, as I said, it's not going to be an easy gig, but it's so worth getting in there to see if we can make some positive changes and bring people along with us.
In terms of the climate crisis, which of course you mentioned, how much do you think that the Isle of Man will have to work with the UK government, for example, in ensuring that the climate emergency doesn't get worse? Or are there things specifically that the Isle of Man that you feel can do without working with other countries' governments that can make things better for people on the Isle?
Yeah, well, there's heaps that we can do as an island. We are a very, very windy place. We have, you know, a huge capacity here for green, sustainable, renewable energy. there's one place on the island, Andreas, that has the most sun of anywhere in the British Isles, the most sunlight hours. So we really do have green gold here. And if the political will was there, it always comes down to that, doesn't it? It always comes right back to political will. And we know that it can be done within, you know, the laws of physics and chemistry. We know that we can actually transition our island to a real, you know, a real sort of green, sustainable economy. But we need to have that political will behind it. There are certain issues where we would need to liaise with governments from other countries, either to our left or our right, you know, either Ireland or the UK, or potentially straight to Scotland, which rather than the UK government directly, because I don't think our capacity, we would need to sell electricity back to a grid, and I don't think that we have that capacity at the moment. So we would need to set up agreements, but we don't need to have the say-so or the support of any of the constituencies that surround us. We can't just get on with it. We do have that autonomy. So I guess I have to say it's quite frustrating that whilst this administration has, I would say, caved to pressure and acknowledged the climate emergency, they have dragged their feet about actually taking any action to address that emergency, really rather passing the baton to the new MHKs who will be elected in September of this year. So like I say, I'm fully aware that it's going to be a tough 5 years.
In terms of election, what are your sort of ambitions in terms of seats that you're hoping to win? Have you got a set target, or are you looking just on a basis of whatever seats that can be won? You know, it's a step forward and it's great.
So we have three candidates who have declared for September's election. Obviously myself, Douglas East, Sarah Maltby, who is the chair of the Manx Labour Party, she's declared for Douglas South. And we also have Gareth Young, who's declared for the constituency of Garth. So we, you know, our aim at the moment is to have those three elected, and 3 out of 24, I think, will be well on our way there. We have focused, I was elected as leader last year, last summer, and we have focused upon local authority elections, and we've built up our local councillors. And really, I guess the idea behind that was to try and establish a rapport with the electorate, to try and build up trust and confidence in our members. And I think that really has been very positive. Our two newly elected Douglas councillors have been absolutely fantastic. And, you know, I would hope to be working very closely with them. And that's our goal, is that we will be able to work as actually a more coherent team going forwards when we have people who are affiliated and who are bound by a political ethos. That means that they are more likely to work coherently. And, oh, we don't half need that, really, you know, in terms of local and national government. Really do need to be working more coherently. The people of the Isle of Man deserve it. They really, really do. And I think that's something that we could bring. So, yeah, at the moment, it's just the three seats that we're looking to contest. And our aim, yeah, is to get all three of us elected. And I think we have a good chance.
In terms of campaigning, obviously, coronavirus will probably have an impact even in September, though hopefully not too much of an impact. What sort of plans have you got in place in terms of campaigning, if there are still some restrictions in place? Has campaigning over the past year been difficult because of the restrictions?
Yeah, it has been. We are in, I think it's day 37 now of our third circuit breaker lockdown. We've spent the vast majority of the year with complete freedoms on the island, but closed borders. Unlike, I know that the UK has been particularly badly affected, and you guys have been, you know, facing quite a tragic situation there. I would say I had to give our government credit. They pursued an elimination strategy rather than a live with it or mitigation. And we're largely successful for the first year of the pandemic. I think they're losing the public confidence in this third lockdown now. But, you know, we're down to either zero or one case per day over the last 5-6 days. I would imagine we'll be out of the lockdown by the 19th of April and all restrictions will be lifted again there. And, you know, obviously we're up to more than 50% of our population that's vaccinated. Mm. So I'm sincerely hoping that it doesn't really impact any further. At the moment, we haven't been able to canvass. I think there was a brief period of time towards the end of January, beginning of February, throughout February, that we had all restrictions lifted. And I know Sarah was able to get out canvassing then. I hadn't declared at that point. And she'd managed to get to a few hundred houses. She'd done really well, making headway on her campaign. But as far as I'm concerned, I'm late to start now. I really need to get out on the campaign trail. And I really need to start knocking on doors and, you know, getting my manifesto out there and having conversations with people. So as soon as restrictions are lifted, yeah, but it does seem to positively benefit the people who are already sitting, because they are already electioneering from their position as sitting MHKs. That's just the way that it works, and we have to accept that that's the case. But it does seem to give them an advantage there at this point in time, where there are restrictions in place. So we aren't really able to do anything, but obviously they are able to table motions that get press coverage, and they know that they will, etc. So there's a lot of that going on, but we have to just accept that that's always going to be the case. Mm-hmm. I think as soon as restrictions are lifted, which I would imagine will be the 19th of April, it's going to be nose to the grindstone and yeah, getting out there.
We're coming towards the end of the podcast. It's been great having you on, and I've got one final question. You've perhaps already answered it. Coronavirus has obviously impacted all of our lives, and restrictions have made things difficult in terms of getting out and travelling. When restrictions are lifted in the Isle of Man, what one thing that you haven't been able to do are you most looking forward to being able to do?
it's just so many, Will. It's hard to choose one, isn't it? I mean, like I say, we have been quite fortunate on the island in that we spent the vast majority of the last year with no restrictions at all, apart from the fact that we weren't able to freely travel on and off the island. Our borders were essentially closed. But we've had, you know, festivals and gatherings, and we didn't have any restrictions in place because we had eliminated it locally, the virus locally. But I, as I said, we're on, I think it's day 37 now of this this latest lockdown, and we are allowed at the moment to gather outdoors. And so I went to visit my dad last week and we went for a walk, but it was very, very strange not being able to give him a hug. Mm-hmm. And so that is one of the things I think I really can't wait to do, is just, you know, give my mum and my dad a hug, and everybody who lives outside of my household, I suppose, from my family. It's very strange seeing people and not being able to, you know, go any closer than 2 meters away. And so I think that's probably the thing that I'm most looking forward to.
I think that that's a great thing to look forward to. I hope you'll be able to do it soon, and I'm sure a lot of the people listening as well are looking forward to being able to hug their relatives again soon. Thank you again for coming on. If people want to find out more about yourself, your campaign, the Manx Labour Party, where should they go?
Okay, so we've got a website, which is themanxlabourparty.com. Our constitution is on there, which is a great starting point for what our ethos is, really. That's just the sort of rock bed, really, of what we stand for. We also have a Facebook page, which is just Manx Labour Party. All of our contact details are on there, and we really do welcome contact from any country. You know, we're really interested in hearing from Labour movements or progressives all over. So, yeah, do feel free to get in touch with us.
Excellent. Thank you once again for coming on the podcast.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast. If you've enjoyed it, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, Podbeam, and Amazon Music. You can also follow us on Twitter, @DebatedPodcast, like us on Facebook, Debated Podcast, and if you'd like to get in touch with us, whether about appearing on an episode of the podcast, or commenting on an episode that you've listened to, you can do so at thedebatedpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. I hope you listen to the next one.